northern half. So nice work there.
Yeah, shout out to Megan Buffington, our reporter, for putting
and map
that
maker, our local map maker
and list maker and all of the organizational
graph maker.
Things maker. Yeah, she did a great job putting that together. You know, we counted the stories that we'd done, and we had published almost 900 stories at our website that were either from our team or from partners or were from, you know, local organizations and that wanted to tell us about events or opportunities for people to participate in public comment. Almost a third of those were had a byline, meaning it had one of our names on it. We did the work. We showed up. We were there in person. We made the calls. We sifted through the documents or just added context that was necessary to, for people to understand it. So, yeah, we're doing the work, and we're looking forward to a 2026 that has some exciting opportunities ahead for us. So,
yeah, anything to preview for us of projects or what you're thinking of for the year ahead?
Well, aside from the election, which is going to be a big old project, we also are excited to that we will be we were granted some funds to do a project. Larissa Donovan, our other reporter, will be taking the lead on this, where we're going to be exploring the impacts of incarceration in the Indigenous communities of northern Minnesota. So we're hoping to host some listening sessions. We're doing some planning on that right now, and hope to have some coverage come out of that as well. And I foresee similar of having also moments of beauty and hope come out of those interactions and being able to sit down with people and really hear their stories. And so we're looking forward to digging into that and a couple other things in the wings that we'll be sharing with you as we go along here.
Sounds great. That's Chelsea Perkins. You can read the news at KAXE.org. Sign up for a podcast of the Up North Report. Talk to you soon, Chelsea.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chelsea. You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210 DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text word donate to 218-326-1234.
Dense fog advisory until 11 o'clock today. Reduced visibility and icy roads expected. Mostly cloudy skies, highs 30 to 35 with northwest winds 5 to 15. Mostly cloudy overnight tonight with lows from 5 to 15. And tomorrow Friday, mostly to partly sunny. Highs 25 to 30 degrees.
We receive support from Rapids Brewing Company, a place for gathering and community, featuring live music multiple times a week, farm fresh food, and rotating beers from their own brew house. More information about their events, music, and menu available at rapidsbrewingco.com.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem says the deadly shooting of a woman in Minneapolis yesterday by an officer with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement was an act of self-defense. The woman was shot while in her vehicle. NPR's Jimena Bustillo has more.
The 37-year-old motorist had defied orders to, quote, get out of the car and drove forward as an ICE officer reached for the door. Another officer opened fire. Secretary Noem called the driver's alleged actions, quote, domestic terrorism, and said the officer was acting in self-defense.
Our officer followed his training, did exactly what he's been taught to do in that situation, and took actions to defend himself and defend his fellow law enforcement officers.
Some Minneapolis officials and eyewitnesses dispute that account of the incident. Mayor Jacob Frey told immigration officers to leave the city and said that he didn't believe the use of lethal force was justified. Minneapolis is the latest city to see an influx of immigration enforcement officers. Jimena Bustillo, NPR News.
Minnesota Governor Tim Walz also denounced the shooting. In a post on social media, the governor described the Trump administration as a propaganda machine, saying he had viewed video of the incident. Walz says the state will ensure a full investigation. In Utah, authorities are investigating a shooting outside a meeting house of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Salt Lake City. Two people were killed and several others were injured, some critically, as Elaine Clark with member station KUER explains.
Salt Lake City police say at least six others are injured, three of them in critical condition. It happened just after 7:30 Mountain Time. There was a funeral going on at the church. Police say they have solid leads, but the suspects are not in custody. The FBI says it has offered assistance. In a statement, the church, which is headquartered in Salt Lake City, said it is cooperating with law enforcement. It also expressed deep concern that, quote, any sacred space intended for worship should be subjected to violence. For NPR News, I'm Elaine Clark.
Later today, the House is expected to pass a bill to revive federal health care subsidies that expired at the end of December. Four House Republicans recently joined Democratic lawmakers to force the vote through a signed discharge petition. The Congressional Budget Office is revising downward its estimate of population growth in the U.S. over the next decade. The CBO says it now projects 7 million fewer people will be added to the overall population, largely due to the Trump administration's crackdown on illegal immigration. The new number is compared to projections 1 year ago. This is NPR News from Washington. California Governor Gavin Newsom is scheduled to deliver his final State of the State address today in Sacramento. Newsom will be speaking at the State Capitol building. In previous years, the two-term Democratic governor has pre-recorded the address on video. Newsom's final State of the State address comes 1 year after wildfires broke out in Southern California, killing more than 30 people and causing billions of dollars worth of damage to homes and businesses. Alaska Airlines says it plans to purchase more than 100 new planes from Boeing as it expands its fleet. As NPR's Joel Rose reports, the move signals the airline industry's renewed confidence in Boeing's manufacturing quality.
Alaska Airlines is buying 110 jets from Boeing, the biggest single order in the airline's history, as it looks to add more international routes. The order is also a big deal for Boeing, as CEO Kelly Ortberg explained at an event in Seattle.
It's more than an order. This is about a doubling down of their commitment to the Boeing company. And I want to make sure you know that we don't take that lightly.
The deal comes 2 years after a door plug panel blew out of an Alaska Airlines flight in midair. That triggered a crisis of safety and quality at Boeing, leading to a shakeup in leadership and a host of other changes at its factories and suppliers. Joel Rose, NPR News.
A day after the Dow and the S&P 500 closed at record highs, stocks on Wall Street ended mostly lower yesterday. The Dow dropped 466 points to close below the 49,000 mark. The S&P lost 23. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Luminescence Foundation. Luminescence Foundation is dedicated to shedding light on neurological research focused on Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases and supporting land conservation initiatives. This is NPR.
It is 8:08. You are tuned in to People Powered KAXE. Thanks for being here. I'm Heidi Holton with Kari Hedlund. Up next, we will be talking with Star Tribune reporter Aaron Brown, columnist Aaron Brown. Stay tuned for that, and longtime contributor to KAXE.
The Buck Lake Improvement Club has their monthly breakfast buffet this Sunday from 9 to noon at their community center, 12 miles north of Nashwauk on Highway 65. Enjoy a blizzard of flavors. We receive support from Bonner Eye Clinic with locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, offering cataract surgery, LASIK, and general eye exams. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly.
And thanks also to North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org. 8:11. You're listening to the Thursday morning show. It's music there.
Yeah, L. Michael's Affair out with a new album, 24 Hour Sports. That is led by Leon Michaels. And that song, of course, the voice, you know, Norah Jones, Carry Me Away was the name of the song. Coming up at 9, it's some great music on Headwaters with DJ Dang.
It is Thursday morning, and we're going to be talking right now with Aaron Brown. He is a columnist with the Star Tribune, longtime contributor to KEXE, avid coffee drinker, joining us now.
Taking a sip right yes. before I start the interview.
I know, yes. but you got to get a little oomph there.
Yep, exactly.
We're going to talk about one of the columns you did recently about libraries, but first, you know, we just had Chelsea Perkins join mm-hmm. us, and I think it's important to kind of keep this conversation going about kind of our media diets in the times that we have been living in this week in the state of Minnesota, of like mm-hmm. paying attention to how much media, and probably for you, like Chelsea, it hurts for someone to hear people say, just turn off the news, you know, or just don't yeah. read it. But how do we...
How do you
yeah,
how stay do we, informed and
how do you
deal you know? With it?
Yeah. Well, of course, I always come back to, you know, when I was a teacher, when people talk about the media, we're talking about a lot of different stuff. And it's, you know, it used to be, for those of us, I heard some of the conversation earlier, who might be getting a little older.
Perimenopause.
grew up in a world where the news came on at night and mom and dad watched the news, and then MASH was on after the news. We watched MASH, you know, knowing nothing about the Korean War. But it was a world where the paper came in the morning, the news was on the TV in the evening. You might have the news on the radio as you drove to work. And that was the news. And now the news is, you know, almost like a Clockwork Orange. They're pumping it into us. And we choose to participate in social media and watch YouTube videos and then all the things that come with that. And that comes with just a lot more, in an event like this, more trauma. Because obviously, we're not just watching a news report on the shooting in Minneapolis. We're watching the video itself, including the event. And that is traumatic. And for us, just what Minnesota's been through, just look at the, whether it's the political assassinations, the Annunciation shootings, the George Floyd murder, and then the riots that followed 4 years ago, 5 years ago. It's just in Minnesota, a place where, you know, we used to watch the news and read the paper and, you know, think that we're in the middle of the country where not much ever really happens. We're where everything is happening right now. And that's a different thing than watching the news. So don't stop watching the news, please. Don't stop listening to and supporting KEXE's newsroom. Don't please read the Minnesota Star Tribune and other whatever media source you like. Stay informed and stay active with what's going on. But my goodness, some of the other stuff we can trim back. I had to stay off social media last night. I had to just take that phone and put it away mm-hmm. and not look at it because you're re-traumatizing yourself when you watch. And then the other thing that is different than the news, but that is related to the news, and that is the most traumatic part for me as a person who's studied and practiced journalism or public writing for so long, is the fact that as soon as an event happens, we have this kind of societal a clash over what just happened, mm-hmm. and people rush and you know, as soon as it happened. We saw the conflicting narratives immediately start to be developed. We're living in a time where the administration that's in office is in fact there because it has shown the ability to craft a narrative that is its own. It is not like past administrations that way. It and you saw in how they, you know, I don't know if they even saw the video before. Lead officials were calling the driver a terrorist, you know, and so even though the video shows that is highly dubious claim. And so, you know, that's the hard part. And when you try to tell the truth, and I know I'm an opinion columnist and people can and do disagree with me, this is beyond disagreement. We're going into what really happened. What is the reality of our world? And that is disturbing, because that is mental illness in an encapsulation. When you can't tell what's real and what's not, that is disturbing. And sometimes it comes from brain chemistry. But what if our society was not convinced of what reality was? Mm-hmm. What if everybody had a different reality, and it's disturbing? And so be disturbed, but stay informed of what's really happening. Form your own conclusions, but my goodness, look at everything before you do. And and then limit the chatter, limit the repetition of seeing the news. You don't have to sit and watch 24-hour news all day. That's one thing that I will throw my 24-hour news network people under the bus, because nobody needs to watch the news all day. Nobody does. And millions and millions do.
And I think something I was telling Heidi earlier this morning, that something that was disturbing for myself yesterday, was how desensitized I was upon initially hearing what had happened. I mean, I think empathy across the nation is like, we're sort of in a deficit yeah. of that at the moment.
Oh, it's the worst moment for that I've ever experienced. And just the, because society immediately divided, it was immediately, if that person was a protester, maybe they deserved to die. I'm serious. I'm seeing stuff like that. And that is, it goes beyond, beyond anything I've understood before. My grandfather was a police officer. A lot of people who work in law enforcement understand that they have a job to do, and that it might include the worst thing you ever have to do. But the idea that we'd be cheering it, or suggesting that, this is how you take care of people who are scared or might not be on board with you or whatever. Because listen, if that was a threat to the officer, then frankly, they can walk down the street and shoot whoever they want. And that's a different question. Is that what, I'm a historian as well. And welcome to history. This is, and the questions we struggle with are the questions that people have struggled with many times before. Martin Luther King was shot on the balcony of a hotel in Tennessee. And guess what? A lot of people thought he had it coming. And a lot of people went out and said he had said the wrong things and done the wrong things. And only today can most of us look back and say that, no, that was a political assassination. No, that was a horrible event. And that was not who we were as a country. And that is a reason why we should pay attention to the teachings of Dr. King. What would happen today? The same, maybe even worse, because of the amount of media that we all consume and the amount of discord that it foments. And so, don't take history for granted. You're living it, and our reaction is just as important as observing the event itself.
Well, let's move on.
We're talking about libraries now?
Yeah, I know. Let's move on to something fun.
Sorry, everybody. Sorry.
No, this is real. This is what, and I think it's good.
And in some ways, your column and what's happening in the world of libraries in the state of Minnesota, what libraries mean to our communities, is so important and also dire in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I wonder if we just start with, what libraries have meant to you over your history.
Well, as I explained in the column, and Heidi, you're an example, many of my very best friends are or were librarians. And it's because I think I have always had this love of what the library provided when I was a kid. I grew up as many folks who grew up on the range, and we didn't have a lot of money. And I was happened to be a kid who loved books. And so buying a lot of books was not an option. We got books for Christmas and things like that, but mom and dad weren't bringing home books the same way that, they could have if they had a little more scratch. So they would drop us at the library. For me, it was the as a kid, the Virginia Public Library, the Hibbing Public Library. We lived in between those towns. And we went all the time, and it was this very special event. They took us to programming that occurred, summer programming and things. I remember a paper airplane contest at the Hibbing Library. My airplane was not the fastest or the farthest, but it was it won several aesthetic awards for its whimsy, if you can imagine. And So things like that. And then, you know, as I got older, you know, the internet came out. Again, talking about people of a certain age, you know, when the internet started when I was in high school, you know. And when they, you know, and not everybody had the internet. We certainly didn't have it at home. And so, you know, the library was a place where there was literally a portal to the bigger outside world, not only the books and the shelves, but the internet. And so for a lot of people, your first internet access was the public library. And then it was a place. And this is the part I think, looking back, I mourn the most when I hear about libraries struggling for the fact that you can go to a library as a kid or as a teenager or at any age and you can sit there. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to sign up for anything other than even a library card is technically optional. You can sit on a, as long as you follow the rules, and they're pretty basic. Don't be a jerk. don't be a disturbance. And you can sit there and you can be there. And it's perfectly fine. You don't have to be anything special. You don't have to do anything or be anything. And that is something that we have so little of in our society today, because I can go to a coffee shop, but I have to buy a cup of coffee. And at some point, they don't have to let me sit there all day. And many don't, you know, because they need the table, because it's a business, you know. And a lot of places make it, you know, whether it's through their HVAC systems or the way that they structure their layout, fast food restaurants, they don't want you staying there all day long, and you got to pay to be there. And then there's clubs and private places you can go, but you got to pay to be there. You can join a church or you can join a political party and have coffee clatches, but it's associated with a group. Where do you go to be just one among many, one among your community, and not have any affiliations? It's the public library, and that's the thing that is in its own way, I think, kind of a balm or a salve for what we're talking about with how people are so divided and detached from one another. A shared reality is something that comes from shared experience, and you know, sitting at home looking at your screens and experiencing your chosen media inputs is something that, you know, puts you not in a community with your surrounding area, but with an online presence, online. And oftentimes we're not even aware of the fact that it's either a propaganda or marketing niche. You know, I'm well aware, you know, there's a reason male girders come on my screen all the time. There's a reason that hats, colorful, interesting hats, appear on my timeline as though by magic. It is because of my consumer behavior, and somehow they know, perhaps cheese orders at the at the grocery store or Googling of recipes for creamy soups, they know. They know what I am, and I am presented with a world chosen not by me, but by a marketing presence in this world. And we all are, you know, it's whether it's fitness, you know, if you like hunting and you look up guns, you're going to start seeing gun stuff. And then you're going to start seeing thing after thing after thing that starts going maybe away from, you know, what you planned to do or what you were interested in into some other areas. And because it's on the screen, feels like the news, doesn't it? You know, it feels like authority telling you something. And then pretty soon we've become drastically detached from our neighbor, and we might even distrust them to the point of violence. And so the library in its glory, yes, there's the internet there and you can access all that stuff if you choose to, but it's also a curated amount of books and people And, you know, when you look at a person, you can usually hate them a little less. I mean, it looks like they have a big, dumb, stupid face or something. But usually you hate them less than when you see their name on a Facebook or on a X or social media feed. Their opinion you may disagree with, but it's really hard to look a person in the face and not see their humanity. You know, and that's what we lack. That's what the library can provide. It's not designed, you know, it's not a program, but it's just, where do you go where everybody is? There's not a lot of places. The grocery store, we come out of our houses when it's nice out and we see each other in the parks. But the library is a place where we can spend indoor time together, maybe not talking to each other, though we could, but existing with each other. That's something I think that is one of the big problems we've got right now.
And in your article, you talk about that loss of the third spaces. That's mm-hmm. sort of, yeah. I think, becoming more of a topic anyway. I feel like it's showing up on my feeds about the third spaces
and now that you said the word, you know.
It's going to. It's,
I started hearing that phrase at the workshop-y discussion type events recently too. And I didn't use it because I was like, well, it's a buzzword. And I don't want this to be about buzzwords, but yeah, where do you go when it isn't home and it isn't work, when you're not being paid to be there and you don't live there?
Not to mention talking about the salve and talking about the respite, the sort of peace and calm for me personally that happens when I walk into a library, whether it was at a school library or a public library. There's something just so calming about being in a space like that.
Yeah. Well, people, I mean, it's not like, as Heidi would point out, I'm sure, you don't get shushed like you imagine from the shows. People can have conversations, but it is generally a place where people are just there to chill. As a working parent, it was, a remote working parent with three young children at one point. I desperately needed the public library as a place where the kids could, they needed some supervision, but as they got to be 5, 6, 7 years old, they were pretty contained. They could go and look at books on their own, and the children's librarian could help them. I could get some work done. You know, and it was a way for the family to operate for a long time. And you know, like I said, there's so precious few places people can go that are free to them. You know, obviously our tax dollars all pay for this, but it is something relatively small on the big picture that is for everyone, and that is something that is kind of rare.
You talk about that a little bit in the article about the funding aspect of it, and this is happening across, you know, we've heard a lot about it within the Grand Rapids area. We're starting to hear about it in Bemidji. You mentioned Duluth and how it's just kind of happened. This conversation is happening across Minnesota right now. Can you talk a little bit about the funding problems?
Yeah, the problems and all of the my childhood libraries and the libraries that have meant something to me are in a funding crisis right now. Every single one of them, whether it's Hibbing, Virginia, Grand Rapids. I'm not a longtime patron of the Bemidji Library, but they're going through the same thing. The Duluth Library is going through the same thing. And everybody is struggling because local government is struggling with costs, just like we are, just as individuals and families, we struggle with costs, and local governments are too. And there's other things affecting, whether that's state mandates or cost of insurance, which is just absolutely murdering bottom lines in private and public sector alike. And all of this is happening amid an economic reorganization. I don't know what to call it, what we're in right now, but it's certainly a reordering of our economy that might one day be called a new kind of recession. We don't know, but it's happening, and we're experiencing it. And so local governments don't have as much money. Well, you got to cut the budget, right? Or raise taxes. But that's the one thing when people are striving to make ends meet that your voters are telling you they don't want. So what do? You got to cut. And it's just so dang easy. And I don't mean to say that it's callous necessarily, like they don't think about it, but the library feels like a less important thing than, you know, streets, for instance, or and then other major expenses like payroll for your police and fire departments, which are huge chunks of the budget. And so, you know, it ends up kind of being shuffled to the edge of the priority sheet and then falls off the end of it, as it has. You know, nobody in Grand Rapids wanted that the city wanted to make these cuts to the Grand Rapids Area Library. Nobody wanted them to be open 3 days a week. I don't think that's true, but they are. And so that is where you have to think about your priorities, and then find alternatives, economic alternatives to maintain access for people. And that's another thing I talk about in the column.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, what are some communities doing? How are they responding to these cuts?
Yeah, and I'm not advocating that this is how you have to do it everywhere, but one example that I found was in the Wyoming Public Library in Chisago County, Minnesota, part of the East Central Regional Library system. They're piloting this project, just started this week actually, where they're going to have essentially a swipe-in system for the library off hours. So the library is open for its hours, and for them it's midday five days a week, 10 to 2, I think they're going to maintain hours of librarians conducting programming and doing the work of librarians. I mean, might be more than that actually. I think it's 10 to 4. But if you are on a list of people who have taken some training, knowing the library facility and how to use all the amenities, and if you've agreed to you know, the liability of the responsibility of this, you have your library card can swipe you in anywhere from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. And you can use the computers, you can check out books, look at the self-checkout, and you can meet, like have a meeting with, like I do interviews, right? I meet with people. Today I'm going to meet with a researcher working on a project. And so you need a public place where you can meet. It's not like, my wife doesn't want these people walking around the house. So, you know, I got to find a place, right? You know, what if I don't want to pay for a coffee? What if I don't want to go have lunch? That's a whole thing. And then how's that tasting? Lady comes around and you got all that to deal with. You know, the library is a great spot because you can have, there's often little rooms, there's places you can just be there. It's public. It's secure. And it's free. So you can do all that with this swipe-in system. It's not the only place doing this. They're doing a pilot now in Wyoming. But Scott County, Dakota County are both doing this already. And have been for years, since COVID, for 4 years. And there are places where this is working, according to them. You know, they say it's working. And I understand there's, you know, and the talk is, well, isn't this replacing librarians? Isn't this replacing the human element? The idea here isn't to do that. It's just to maintain access when there isn't any. The bitter reality is, if a library is open from 10 to 4 or something like that, or 10 to 5 or even 6, but 5 is maybe more common, I'm never going to get to a public library in my life, you know, because I'm always working during the day. Maybe there's a day off, but if there's a day off for me, it's probably a day off for the library too. So, you know, how do you maintain access so the public can get to it at the times that they need it? And there's just different creative things you can do. Now, that's not the only way you can approach this. There's other kinds of creative things with staggering your hours, doing different things. But a lot of these libraries have already been trying that and doing that. You know, they're at their wit's end too, trying to figure out how to provide this coverage. Everybody wants the coverage. Nobody wants to pay for it. So we got to figure out a way to maybe creatively solve some of these problems. And that's just my view, you know, but, you know, and we, and with that, I think comes the need for investment so that we can keep the staff, operating the library. Obviously it does not just magically appear, the books, the new material, the subscriptions to all the online services, the technology maintenance and repair, all of that requires people. So that's important to acknowledge.
So Aaron, the Grand Rapids Library has started a fund that people can donate to, and I would imagine other places will start entertaining that sort of concept, similar to what we had to do last year once public media was defunded.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? How sustainable is that for citizens to be covering this?
Well, if your town has some money, if some people have some scratch in their pockets because they're upper middle class and they can drop some cash, certain towns are going to do just fine, you know, just like certain towns do great with, you know, obviously look at a town like, not to pick on anybody, but Grand Rapids, you know, hey, wasn't it great that Charles K. Blandon lived in this town and donated his whole fortune to the town 100 years ago? Isn't that great? Lucky us. And it is lucky that he did that because, you know, that's not the necessary default thing that happens to a lot of towns. You know, sure. Like if you're from, you know, somewhere over on the East Range, you didn't have a philanthropist millionaire who dropped a load of money on you, and you might not have a rich audience that can support that now. So it's a thing that can work great for certain towns. It's obviously a stopgap in this strange time where we don't know what the purpose of government is. We don't know what the purpose of community is right now because we all think our little phones are our world and our political allies are our world, and we don't think about random people and who live next door to us or even family members. So we got to figure this part out. But in the short run, certain libraries might be able to raise several thousand dollars or even hundreds of thousands of dollars potentially, maybe. And that would help with certain things. But, you know, like the cost of an employee with benefits is, you know, $100,000 with benefits and maybe more if higher level positions. That's a heck of a lot of money. And, you know, people handing over their quarters and nickels will get you a year, but will it get you, as you guys know, and KAXE knows well, going year to year to year with personnel and electricity costs and everything goes into making a radio station, you need a sustainable amount of money. And that's where, if, you know, foundations can get involved and provide renewing things in certain communities. But the whole point of local government taking the lead on this is that there's a consistent financial source, you know.
Equalizes and things.
It just makes it equal. And the state has in the past gotten involved, and the federal government through grants has gotten involved. But we know that those things are both shrinking, both for economic reasons and political reasons. And I'm not going to, you know, be naive to the fact that having somewhere that's free where you can go and not have to pay a business or a private company
doesn't work with capitalism, Aaron.
Or support a political party is not in the interests of certain parties, of certain interest groups, and they are perhaps having a high point right now in their political world. So, you know, just something to think about. But even so, I think there will always be something. Heck, you know, you could just have a warehouse where people leave their books, and you could have people like, come sit in this warehouse, and it wouldn't be a library by our
wouldn't
modern
be the
standards.
Vibe.
It wouldn't be the same vibe. Wouldn't have the crisp lighting and the nice chairs. But I'd go there before giving up on the library, you know. But we can do better. We know we can. We've done it before.
Before we let you go, Aaron, we've got Bruce in New Prague listening this morning. He texted in, my library is part of the Scott County Library System, and they have the after-hours access as well, and it is surprising at how much after-hour use there is. Loved the interview with Aaron today.
Oh, yeah. Well, great. Now, that's what the people down there said was the case. You know, the Chisago County people went and visited those counties, and they said it was very popular.
Hmm. You can read Aaron's work. He is a columnist with the Star Tribune. You can go to startribune.com or minnesotabrown.com. Aaron, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you. See ya.
Coming up, we've got local news with the Up North Report at 9 o'clock this morning. It is Headwaters with DJ Dang.
Support for KAXE comes from Lady Sippers NA Bottle Shop, located in downtown Deer River, Itasca County's only NA Bottle Shop. Offering ready-to-drink options, ingredients for craft cocktails, gifts, and more. Info available at ladysippers.com.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. Governor Tim Walz is urging Minnesotans to stay calm after federal agents with Immigration and Customs Enforcement shot and killed a woman in her car Wednesday in Minneapolis. The governor also issued a warning order to the Minnesota National Guard in the event of social unrest. With 2,000 agents deployed into the Twin Cities as the state remains in a national political spotlight, Walz said in a press conference Wednesday that the shooting death was avoidable.
It's beyond me that apparently from the federal government, from the Homeland Security Director herself, has already determined who this person was, what their motive was, and they hadn't even been taken out of the vehicle. We're not living in a normal world.
During an unrelated news conference Wednesday, Homeland Security Director Kristi Noem says the federal agent acted in self-defense and called it a, quote, act of domestic terrorism. She says the woman was attempting to run over an ICE agent, appearing to contradict eyewitness accounts and video live stream from the scene. Wall says there has been no communication between federal and state agencies for the immigration deployment, which has been met with protest demonstrations.
I think the thing that is so challenging in the moment we're in is we don't see a desire to work with us on public safety. We hear a demonization of our state. We see people coming in who don't know our community. And we see this massive display for the TVs that we're trying to understand, how is this coordinated?
The victim was identified by the Minnesota Star Tribune as 37-year-old Renee Good, whose mother said she lived in the Twin Cities. Another potential layer of fraud within the state's beleaguered Department of Human Services is being targeted by a legislative auditor. The Minnesota Reformer reports legislative auditor Judy Randall spoke before a panel of lawmakers Tuesday, outlining the findings of a multi-year audit of the Behavioral Health Administration's grant-making practices. The partial review covered about $192 million in grants issued to nearly 600 non-government entities between 2022 and 2024. Randall says many documents were either backdated or created after the audit began in what appeared to be a systemic effort within the department. The audit also revealed other worrisome issues, such as a widespread reliance on non-competitive single-source bids, poor oversight of grantees, failure to conduct site visits, and lax documentation. In one instance, a grant manager approved a payment of nearly $700,000 to a new vendor for 1 month's work, then left state employment a few days later. That unnamed grant manager subsequently provided consulting services to the new vendor. Acting DHS Commissioner Shireen Gandhi told lawmakers that one internal audit conducted by the department was referred to law enforcement, and the agency is working to improve oversight and training for grant managers. Environmental organization CURE is asking the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission to reassess the private equity sale of Minnesota Power, given new information about the power provider's data center plans. Megan Buffington has more.
While the PUC was considering the sale, a Minnesota Power employee testified that there were no specific plans related to data centers, but data requests related to the controversial data center proposed in Hermantown have since revealed the company was at that time actively discussing it with city staff. Additionally, one of the power provider's new owners, Global Infrastructure Partners, recently announced plans to invest billions in data centers. CURE says those two facts are enough to justify additional investigation.
It's not a smoking gun. It's the fact that there's clearly some information that hasn't been disclosed that could show a conflict of interest.
Hudson Kingston is CURE's legal director. He says no one knows who is proposing the Hermantown data center, but there is reason to think GIP might be involved at some level. CURE isn't asking the commission to reverse the sale, but rather reopen the record and take further testimony on data center development and protections against conflicts of interest. Minnesota Power disagreed with the petition, stating it is not a data center developer, and the issues raised are not related to the acquisition or one of its projects. The company's formal reply to the petition is expected in the coming days. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
They sold it on a cross, they sold it on a curve, and now it feels so cheap, not deeper. They sold it as a little light bulb, they sold it as a sticker, and when that feels cheaper, well, it doesn't feel much deeper. There was an ancient light, there was an ancient song. Now something isn't right. Now we live in fluorescent light. They sold it as a muffin. They sold it on TV. They sold it as a tabloid, just to try to get the best of me. They caught us in the bleakness. They caught us on our screens. Brilliant minds go to college just to study marketing. There was an ancient light. There was an ancient song. Something isn't right. Now we live in fluorescent lighting. Most of all our lives under the same line. In schools and prisons and dying. Yeah, it's all in fluorescent light. They sold it as an olive. They sold it as a bomb. They sold it as self-protection while the innocent children run. Grown men want to profit with their fingers on their triggers. But when life feels cheaper, then the dead have to dig deeper. There was an ancient light. There was an ancient song. Now something isn't right. It's the time of fluorescent light. Hey, how'd it get so bright? I turn off my phone.
Music there, chosen by Kari Hedlund, our music director. What'd you have for us?
That was from an album of the week we had in 2025, What of Our Nature, from Haley Hendricks and Max Garcia Conover. That was Fluorescent Light, a song that very much touches on sort of consumerism and just, you know, kind of what we were talking about with Aaron. So felt like it was an appropriate song to play. Mm-hmm. And I love that ending part about I turn off my phone, because we all know when we end our day with our phones, it's not so good, myself included.
You're making me realize I've been a little lax on that, and I need to work on that. So check in.
That's one of my 2026 ideas.
Yeah, I know. Nobody wants to say resolution.
Heck no, no, I will not do that.
Nobody wants to do that. We the new Season Watch podcast is out now at KEXC.org and through your podcast platforms. You'll catch it this weekend on the radio. But I sort of brought that up too, that there might be season watch, and we didn't want to say resolutions, but goals, mm-hmm. you know, of whether that is, I'm going to make a point to know 5 more birds.
Love that.
That are around, or I'm going to go.
That's a fun goal for the year.
Yeah. Or go to this trail that I know exists, but I've never gone on it.
Yes.
You know, those seem like good things to me.
Those seem like very good things. I love that.
Okay, so we should expand on that a little bit.
I would love to explore that more, which actually our question of the week this week is, what are you looking forward to this year?
Yeah.
This has been kind of a tough question, honestly, mm-hmm. for me. But if you have thoughts, we'd love to get yours. Text us 218-326-1234. And if you are looking for a new trail to visit, Minnesota State Parks is offering free admission mm-hmm. on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Monday, January 19th. There are 75 parks and recreation areas across the state. So go for it. Try somewhere new.
Yeah. You know, and then sort of dense why that sounds so good to know more birds or go on a trail you didn't know is because it's a positive thing for you to do. Taking even the phone thing.
You're taking something away, mm-hmm. which is good.
Yes.
But.
Yes. And we'll provide more positive things for you. you know.
Well, and even adding in, you know, movement each day and all those things, like they are really good for you, but they are kind of hard to do sometimes or hard to incorporate the new habits.
Yeah.
Whereas something like that, which you're talking about, is not necessarily a new habit you need to create or form, right, but so, like a new adventure.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
You've inspired me, Heidi, on a day that I didn't think I could be inspired.
Oh,
so
good.
Thank you. That's good. Which you can actually listen to our Season Watch pod. It's released every Thursday around 8 a.m. And it's been a really fun podcast and program on the air. I've enjoyed it personally a lot. So,
yeah, this week we're going to hear, we hear part of the conversation that John Latimer and I had on Tuesday with one of the teachers in the Phenology Network, Chad Kaditz from the middle school in Little Falls. He's been teaching a form of phonology for 30 years. And when he stumbled across that, he said it felt like a secret word that no one understood what that meant.
Oh.
And when he stumbled across KXE and phonology in this network, he just couldn't believe it. It's not a secret club. And this is a guy, and I don't know if you've seen on our website, sometimes there's a chalk drawing of some nature stuff.
Yep.
In the that's him doing that.
Oh.
He adds to it every day in his classroom. He draws these things. And he wants to make it not a part, you know, not a requirement of class, but something fun for class. And so I had the great fortune of sitting with, you know, passionate people about nature, meaning John Latimer and Chad Kaditz, on Tuesday, and hearing them talk about this. And it, at points, both of them kind of, their voices cut out because they were choked up.
Mm.
Because they were thinking about, for Chad, it was about a student who, you know, is older now, is in high school, and on Christmas sent him a video of feeding birds out of her hand. And that's on their feed right now. There's a positive thing to do. Follow Little Falls Phonology on Instagram. That's something that his students pushed
him
to do.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So, it's that's where, you know, echoing our conversation with Chelsea Perkins, that there is also joy in what people do and how community happens within news, within the broadcasts that you hear on KEXC. And honestly, even if you weren't even paying attention to what the content was, to hear kids' voices every week like
that. I know.
That,
it's just like something in the brain that immediately really releases endorphins. Mm-hmm.
So we're excited. There weren't any student reports this week because of the holiday.
Sure.
And we'll be back at it next week. And I suspect a lot of reports. So.
You are listening to the Thursday Morning Show, where we receive support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984, performing auto body and collision repair as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com.
We still do have this dense fog advisory. It remains in effect until 11 a.m. today. And current temperatures around our region, it is 27 in Hibbing, 28 in Aiken, Deer River reporting 28 degrees, Monoman at 25, McGregor at 30, and looking like Brainerd reporting 25 degrees right now.
We also want to thank Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital for their support, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.org.
And thanks goes out to Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's Apple Service Center in Bemidji and Grand Rapids, offering both in-warranty and out-of-warranty service and Apple products and computer repair. More at paulbunyan.net.
Speaking of getting involved in your local community, the Hibbing Public Utilities is hosting a town hall meeting on Monday, January 12th at 6 o'clock in the Little Theater of the Hibbing Memorial Building. They'll provide important information about recent lead testing results and their efforts to reduce lead exposure in the community.
I'm sure someone listening right now has tried this out, the forest ice skating that is being offered at Northland Arboretum in Baxter. It's a gently winding trail through the woods with light elevation changes. I've seen on Facebook that they have gotten donations of skates for people to rent, but mostly women's, so they are still looking for donations of kids and men's sizes of skates. but lots of people going there and the Zamboni going strong to make this trail.
Is it a mini Zamboni?
I don't know. I know they bought like a used, I mean, of course, sure. You know, a Zamboni, but I don't know. I don't really understand how that could work. But someone listening right now must have tried those trails. So I want to hear about it. Text 218-326-1234.
We receive support from the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, dedicated to conserving the rich ecological landscape of Minnesota, offering memberships, educational camps, and habitat projects. More information available at mndeerhunters.com.
Kari, you know, we've been kind of not maybe as we had planned to be talking today because of what's happening in the world and the state of Minnesota. Normally, I would guess you and I would talk about how are your holidays, and we would discuss all this stuff. You had a really exciting thing that can be a little bit dicey for someone in your family to get a gift of a pet.
Yeah. So I think we actually talked about this on air, and I was like, pets in our lives have just sort of come to us, and that's the time that we would, you know, my daughter's been asking for a kitten for a year.
She's told me about it many times.
She is. I mean, this has been going on for a very long time. And this kitten, we went to a cat cafe, and this kitten just laser beamed with Sig. And both times, we went there a couple different times, and it was the same experience both times. And so we did get her a kitten for Christmas, and he's got about 8 different names right now. So we're still landing on a name. I'm voting for Kevin. And... but we've got Zeke, Buddy, Tupac, Kevin. Those are kind of the main ones right now. So we're maybe down to 5. But
you know, and you said Signa, my Buddy is kind of her choice.
Mm-hmm. But we call Poe Buddy.
Yeah,
our
dog. I was going to say, I call my cat Buddy.
I know.
You know, so I mean, that can be a nickname. But
right.
But again, she also should have choice over because it was... she was the one that got...
she does seem okay with... chosen. Anders wants to call him Tupac. Okay. And she seems okay with Anders calling him Tupac.
Okay.
Me and Kyle keep referencing him as Kevin. And she'll give us a side eye, but she's pretty okay with it. So we'll see. I don't know where we're going to land there. But
you'll know.
It was pretty fun over the holidays to have. And our dog... Poe, I think he was born to be a mom. So he is like... but still, yes. But he is still very... little timid around the, because you know, he's grown up with our other cat who has had zero time for him at all, and so I think he doesn't quite know what to do with a kitty that actually wants to snuggle with him and play with him. But and then Indy, our old cat, she has come around more than I've seen her in months. She kind of goes into these like seasonal hideouts where she just kind of like stays away.
Torpor.
What is that?
We were just talking about that on the Season Watch podcast. That's when animals kind of go. It's a form of
hibernation.
Yeah.
Indy does that every year. Mm-hmm. And I have seen her more in the last 3 weeks than I've seen her in the past 2 months. So that's been kind of fun. I mean, she doesn't really have time for the kitty, but she's there.
Yeah.
It's good.
Thanks for the story. Coming up, we'll have Headwaters with DJ Dang. This is 91.7. KAXE, Grand Rapids, Aiken, Hibbing, and Virginia, 90.5, KBXE, Bagley, Bemidji, Fauston, Park Rapids, and in Brainerd and Nisswa and Fort Ripley at 89.9. Or on your smart speaker or at KAXE.org. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota.
We receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company envisioning a carbon-free future through their Energy Forward strategy. More at mnpower.com/energyforward. Also want to thank the Mental Health Crisis Response Team of Itasca County for their support. This crisis intervention service is a program of first